And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, every week there's a whole laundry list of horrible things that this or that Republican has done in pursuit of the MAGA agenda. And somebody on Substack did a deep study of what it all amounts to, and discovered that for the most part, more than 50% of the Project 2025 agenda has been successfully applied. In some cases to the tune of 100%, in some cases to the tune of 50%, and in between. But across the board, that playbook, which Trump disavowed, said he didn't know anything about, hadn't read, wasn't connected with him, that's been what he's done. That's what his administration has done. It's all in there, and nothing else that he has done that's aside from what is in there has been done. So let me ask you this. From all of that, what is the America that we need to, that we will be getting back to when we make America great again? What do they have in mind? What country are they looking for? What society are they looking for?
Well, you know, they used to say it was the America of the 1950s that Trump grew up in. The Ozzie and Harriet nation, or the Leave It to Beaver nation that you used to see on television. But in reality, what the Project 2025 is somewhere around the Jim Crow era of the late 19th and early 20th century. Minorities have no place in areas of power. They only have to, their place is where we tell them their place is, and workers are subservient to corporate greed, in essence. Whatever makes money to the max is what we want to do and what we want to, where we want to go.
They were also ferociously anti-scientific. And this was an era before science really was established, the truth of science was established. And there were all sorts of pseudoscientific theories, the most important of which was the eugenics movement, which proposed that the human race was actually many races, some superior and some inferior. And the inferior races had to be led by the superior races for their own good.
Yeah. And then, you know, phrenology, you know, studying bumps on the
head.
On the head,
which things like that. Criminality, right?
Although, in some ways, it's kind of worse than, because there were movements in the early 20th century, Horace Mann and whatever, to educate masses of people. And in the 1950s, you had the GI Bill educating people, mostly white men who'd come home from the war, but those were still projects. These folks disdain education. They disdain knowledge. They use what knowledge produces, but they disdain that. That's one of the attacks you see, one of the reasons you see the attacks on universities, and get rid of the Department of Education. Of course, we also have, anti-Darwinism in terms of evolution, the religion. By the way, I don't know if you saw this week that Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, held a prayer meeting in the Pentagon, at which Donald Trump was extolled as having been divinely appointed to the presidency.
That it wasn't just a prayer meeting, it was a Christian prayer meeting. There was no attempt to make it an ecumenical religious experience, which would be bad right. enough. This was a specifically Christian prayer meeting, and Donald Trump was anointed by Jesus to be president.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, and it, once you say that, and it's hard to fight. Then you become anti-religious. You become the people opposed become the Antichrist, and therefore they have to be put down. It's a whole system. But I did want to remark. You know, when you talk about the putting into effect the Project 2025. I've seen and heard a lot of talk about people who've run focus groups or done polling, and the MAGA people are still sticking with it. And they're pointing to the fact, they said, Donald Trump is doing what he promised to do. We want these policies. And one of the advantages that the Trump I don't want to say organization as his business, but the Trump administration has, is that the effects of his policies haven't kicked in yet. So what people are seeing is the dog and pony shows, the circus, and the appearance of we're doing things. Every day we've got a new thing coming out, and this is going to make America great or greater. We just haven't seen the after effects. For instance, you know, now you can't, we're going to forbid foreign students from coming here. Or we're going to force the ones that are here to go back to the countries. Well, what about the ones that are in the middle of some very sophisticated scientific work that would treat diseases or that would help society in other ways? All of that goes away. But people haven't seen that. And a lot of things that are being worked on are long-term projects. So people have no idea of what is or what isn't.
Most basic science is long-term. Most basic science has no immediate application. Most technological development depends on long-term scientific research that, when it's being done, has no practical application. That's the point of the technological work on as an adjunct of the basic science. So that's the way it works. You elucidate the underlying law, and then based on what your technology is, you figure out a way to use the new knowledge of the basic law to make a leap forward in your technology. That's how scientific progress and technological progress works. At least it's how it worked in the Industrial Revolution. Before the Industrial Revolution, mankind had 300,000 years of basically no industrial development, no scientific development. So it didn't work that way. MAGA probably would like to go back to no development, because the effect of their policy is to stop the only way knowledge, scientific knowledge, knowledge of nature develops. They want to stop that. But if you stop it, you won't get it, naturally. At least you won't get it where you stop it. So these are profoundly ignorant people. Their ideology, which forces them into this profound ignorance, is one thing. But the effect of the ideology is to attempt to bring us to a pre-industrial mode of living. That's fine if the total world's population is less than a billion, but we have 8 billion going on to 10 billion. It isn't possible without mass murder for these 8 to 10 billion to live in a MAGA world.
Well, what you may have is mass disease, because we're not researching that. I mean, could you imagine if they hadn't come up with a COVID vaccine, which was one of the better achievements of the Trump of one administration.
It's true, but the people who were behind that, who drove it and made it happen, were all fired in the Trump II administration.
Yeah,
and they were fired for doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's run away from that.
Yeah.
By the way, there is going to be a short-term finding of science, and that's RFK Jr. says we're going to find, by September, we're going to find the cause of autism. against all of the science, which says, you know, we can't pinpoint it at this point. It's going to take a lot longer. Although he did give an interview this week, say, well, we're going to just start the basics of finding that. You know, what in essence he wants to do is reinstate the conspiracy theories that he has on diseases and whatever. Now, making America healthy again is a worthy goal, and the idea of that there's a lot that's put into the environment or into the food chain that is unhealthy is, I think, worthy. He's bringing that up, but his solutions for dealing with it are another thing.
Well, that's the whole story of MAGA. Much of what they point to, ought to be pointed to, is bad, ought to go, but not in the direction that they're saying it should go, not in the way that they say it should go, and not for the reasons that they say it should go.
Yeah. And that was the kind of the difference between Trump and Bernie. You know, they were both talking about many of the same things, particularly economically, but their solutions were two totally different directions. Trump was, let's empower the rich and the corporates and the environmentally damaging, and Bernie's was just the opposite of that. We've got to tax the rich at a higher rate. We have to put in more protections for people. But Trump was a better salesman in many ways. That's his specialty, the con man idea.
What do you make, by the way, of the latest developments about John Fetterman? He comes to mind, first of all, because he's our senator, but also because one of the things he claims that he's doing that's so good to do is he's friendly with the Republicans wherever he can be friendly with the Republicans, which is pretty much everything because he doesn't seem to do anything else.
Well, he's somewhat of an enigma. I think he's more or less a fish out of water. He might be the Peter principle that he rose to his level of incompetence. On the other hand, you have to remember during the Biden administration, he voted for every one of the judges that Biden appointed. He stuck with the Democrats on that. And there are a lot of people that say, hey, we should try to work together. The question is what you work together on. But I think there's a couple things. We know that he does have mental health issues. And I'm still of the belief that the stroke that he had has done a change to his thought processes and his way of approaching things. And you can't really measure that. You can't see that. I say that because my mother had a stroke and it did certain changes to her personality. And I did research into things and you know, the brain works in very strange ways. When I was doing research on her stuff, she had aphasia where she couldn't recall certain words. And you'd read stories where people could remember the names of vegetables, but they couldn't remember the names of fruits. I mean, it's that on that subtle a basis in the brain that things can happen. And I think that you know, he was always somewhat of a loner, you know, the one possible friend that he had in the Senate, Bob Casey, they did seem to work together pretty well, you know, was gone. You know, I think Fetterman just isn't really enjoying what he's doing, and there are reports he isn't taking his medication, which could be another thing. But right now, he's still a Democratic vote for the most part. He voted for a couple of the Trump cabinet people, but not all of them. And I think the best way is to try to is not to attack him, but to try to work with him. I think he blew a big opportunity. He could have used his mental health issues as a positive example, rather than feeling that that it's a negative, and letting that dominate his thought. He got a lot of support from people who said, you know, he faced up to his challenges from the stroke. You know, as time goes on, I don't know where he's going. I'd be surprised if he decides to run again for Senate. I don't think he's enjoying it. I think he'd rather be home with his family. He did have thoughts of wanting to become president, and I think he's realizing that ain't in the cards. That's beyond him. That's beyond him at this stage.
He's an interesting example on what to do politically today. I contrast him with Senator Murphy of Connecticut. Who's very clear. He says you have to challenge the Republicans across the board. You don't agree with them on anything. You have to raise a different banner, a different standard, a different goal, and you have to challenge everything they do, because no matter what they say about what they do is only to enrich the rich, the already rich, and make them even richer, and to do so at the expense of everybody else. As we know, as you pointed out to me, in the last year, the 10 richest individuals in the United States of America increased their wealth by how much?
$365 billion, a billion a day.
A billion a day. That's 10 people. That's not even their relatives. That's just 10 people. Well, he says that, Murphy says, you got to challenge that. As against that, Fetterman could be the poster child for a different approach. Work with them when you can. But why should you work with them when you can? When, if you try to work with them when you can, you give them the cover of your reputation as a defender of the people that they're attacking. Strikes me that you should not work with them where you can. You should challenge them effectively where you can. And
you're describing the British system.
Any parliamentary system. But the Republican Party operates as a parliamentary party.
Yes.
It doesn't operate in the way that the American political system operated 100 years ago, where the Democrats and the Republicans were conglomerates, and each representative or each senator had his own policy, and the task of the leadership was to knock them together and form a voting majority, and for which they used patronage and pork barrel as a way to do that. Pork barrel is gone, patronage is gone, and the Republican Party is a disciplined national party, but the Democrats are not. And the result is the Republicans get things done and the Democrats can't effectively oppose it. Even to the extent that they could, taking into account that they don't have the votes, but they could in terms of building a mass movement, and they don't do it. Murphy is trying to do it. Bernie is trying to do it. AOC is trying to do it. But the majority of the Democrats regard it as not their job. They're not of elected representatives. It's not their job. And if that's not their job, then whose job is it?
Well, that's what's playing out. You know, among the Democrats, I wanted to talk a little bit about the election across Pennsylvania, because it certainly was a mixed result. The city of Pittsburgh in recent years has become, a hotbed of liberalism, of left-leaning politics. They elected Sumner Lee as a member of the Squad to Congress. She got reelected.
Despite a big, big campaign, well-funded, to get rid of her.
Right. And the mayor of Pittsburgh was the first black to be elected mayor. And he got beat this time.
The fact that he's black didn't make him progressive. After all, no. Clarence Thomas is black.
Right. But still, his policies. And, you know, Pittsburgh is seen as a working class town, mm-hmm. or it was at one point. Certainly not a yuppie place. But... Ed Gainey got beat for re-election. On the other side of the state, in Philadelphia, the DA, the George Soros-backed ultra-liberal DA, got re-elected again with a against a fairly well-funded and well-organized opponent. And Larry Krasner has been the target of many Republicans. Remember, they were talking, trying to impeach him in the Senate, as if they could.
He refused to appear. They subpoenaed him. He said, "I'm not coming."
Then the court, I believe the court's ruled, the Senate can't impeach a DA in Philadelphia. Yeah. It's not within their powers. Not that they wouldn't try, but they were trying to make him as a symbol.
Right.
And he played.
And he made an interesting comment this week about a movement that's just suddenly arisen with some strength to pardon the guy who killed George Floyd, Derek Chauvin, the cop, who got two sentences, a federal sentence and a state sentence of 22 and a half years. And there's a movement by the right now to say that he didn't kill George Floyd. George Floyd died of a drug overdose or something like that. And Larry Krasner says, if they do get Trump to pardon him, we got to be careful about how we protest that, because the real thing they're aiming for is an excuse to send the army into the cities.
Trump has threatened that before, into Portland, into Minneapolis, things like that.
Yeah. They're very powerful when a big DA like Krasner in Philadelphia makes that point.
Yeah. The only thing is, I believe that Chauvin was also convicted on state charges.
He was. He got 22 and a half years on state charges.
So he wouldn't be out on the streets.
No, he wouldn't be. But he would get a federal pardon.
Yeah, but like the January 6th pardon people. And by the some of whom have already been rearrested on other crimes, by the way.
And Ashley Babbitt, who was killed trying to break into the Congress, Trump gave her family $5 million.
Right, rewarding that.
Yeah.
Continue to be rewarded because she stuck up for him.
Yeah.
I do want to also touch upon, our local Scranton election, because we had the incumbent. By the way, the incumbent also got beat in Erie, a two-term mayor. But in Scranton, we had the incumbent who's served a little over one term. She filled out on an unexpired term and then won on her own, Paige Cognetti.
And the unexpired term was unexpired because the mayor went to jail for corruption.
Right. One of the old boy Democrats who thought that the job of the mayor was to extort money for contracts or right. services. But anyway, the Paige Cognetti was opposed by the Democratic city chairman, former head of the school board. She won with 75% of the vote. Bob Sheridan was opposed to her. He ran a spirited campaign. He had TV ads. She didn't. The TV ad was interesting that he only referred to her as she in the ads. So he's the city chairman, and he only got 1,800 votes. Now, what's going to happen down the line is that one of the other good old boy, Democrats who once held office, Gene Barrett, indicated he wanted to run, and he saw the writing on the wall in the Democratic primary. So he says, in November, I'm going to run as an independent. I'm wondering if he's going to reevaluate that, because when she gets 75% of the vote, if he picks up all of the Sheridan vote, where else is he going to get votes? The Republicans had two women running, and between them, they only had a total of 1,800 votes. So if you put their 1,800 and Sheridan's 1,800, you got 3,600 votes. Give the others another, so you get 4,000 votes. She's already at 6,200. That's over a 60-40 split. Where are they going on this? But she also, it was interesting, tried to have some coattails. She was backing and running almost as a team with a young man, Todd Polis, who wanted to be a city councilman. And there were three seats up, and he wound up fourth. He lost out by about 200 votes. So her coattails weren't quite as long. And he was, I just don't think he was well enough known to be successful in his race. But so she's going to be out there with not full support of city council. She's got, I think, two members. There's another one that one of her allies on council, Jean Smurl, failed to have sufficient petition signed. How you can't get 100 people to sign is something I don't know. He's indicating he might run as a write-in in November. We'll have to see about that. But that was one of the consequences.
In Pennsylvania, if you run in a primary, you're barred from running as an independent candidate.
Right.
You can organize a campaign as a write-in because officially you're not on the ballot.
Right. I do want to get back to the congressional race that's going to take place next year, because all of the Republicans, congressmen in Pennsylvania, including yours and mine, you have Dan Muser, I have Rob Bresnahan.
Yeah, but Rob, Dan Muser didn't promise to vote against the attacking Medicaid, but your congressman signed a letter saying that he would not vote if Medicaid was attacked, and then went ahead and voted to attack Medicaid.
Yes, I'm shocked that he stuck with the Republican Party and the millionaires and the billionaires.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big issue next year when it comes up on that. We still don't know what Matt Cartwright's going to do, but my indication is he's not going to run.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't made any formal announcements. But I haven't gotten a call asking for money from him. So that's one of the indications. We'll have to see.
He's foolish not to run. He's well-placed to run.
It seems
to me Bresnahan is in a very weak position.
Yeah, I think Matt could win that, but he doesn't want to start out as a freshman congressman again either. So we'll have to see how
you
that
know,
plays
there
out.
Was Claude Pepper was a congressman from Florida for many years, and then he got beat. And when he went, and then he got reelected again. Meanwhile, when he was a sitting congressman for God knows how many terms, he had huge seniority in a very important position, got beat, he lost it all. He also had to go back in as a freshman. It didn't matter. He was not really a freshman. He didn't get the committee assignments he wanted. It didn't matter at all. He still had the influence.
Well, he was originally a senator, and he got beat by George Smathers, who attacked him because his sister was a thespian, and they'd gone to Harvard, whose colors were the red of communism. You know,
right?
That went over well in the Panhandle. Claude came back as a congressman and did a lot yeoman's work on retired people.
Yeah, he was very effective.
He was very effective.
I think that. Cartwright ought to look at the history a little bit and take note of where he could really play a useful role.
Yeah. We're just going to have to see how that plays out with the others as well. There are some challenges to Trump. Harvard has not backed down. Some of the other law firms won their cases. They decided to fight Trump. Paul Weiss, which capitulated to Trump, lost four of its prime partners because of that.
Lost us the rest of our time. We're gone.
Well, we want to wish everybody a happy Memorial Day and remember the sacrifice that people had. It started out as a Civil War decoration day, decorating the graves, and it now represents, along with Veterans Day, all of the fighting men and women who stood up for the country.
But if the MAGA people have their way, if Trump has his way, we'll be fighting the Civil War all over again.
We're back to Jim Crow.
You're back to Jim Crow. See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.